Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on Internet Blog Talk Radio, your host, Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the individual, the family nucleus, careers, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. for Managing Change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now, also here at www.managingchange2.com. Internet radio at its best.
And welcome once again to Managing Change. I'm your host, Von Allen. To the music space out here. We have a very special guest for you today. We talk about and continue to promote the Mid-Atlantic Conference that's coming up at Bally's Casino in Atlantic City. And along with my guest, Kathy Dior, who is the host of this conference, and she's in her 30th year of providing such valuable content across all businesses and certainly across the United States. Our guest today is Dominic Belfiore. He is a lead business opportunity specialist. What does that mean for you, the small business owner? He specializes in connecting business owners with their resources necessary to start, grow, and succeed in their businesses with specific focus on aiming or aiding small businesses to compete for contracts in the federal marketplace. Good morning, Dominique.
Good morning, Ronald. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Kathy, you're with us online?
I am on.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I wanted to start off because I saw in your profile, Dominique, a very unique opportunity that you were able to engage in, and that was with the Emerging Leaders Initiative. And the work that you did is because you mentioned that as a business owner and your observation, you found that small businesses are constantly getting bogged down in the minutiae of the day-to-day grind of running a business as opposed to long-term, as we talk about succession planning as a goal, so that everything you do is to grow the business, and all the both strategic and tactical maneuvers you make is so that investors can be attracted, people who might consider buying out the business so that you can retire and enjoy your years of work and investment. So I wanted to ask you, what can you share with the business owners that are listening to this program and that will be looking to attend the March 31st conference? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the nuances? What are some of the technical and strategic behaviors they should be engaged in to make their business successful?
Sure. I think if there's one pivotal aspect and mindset to touch upon, it would be thinking of themselves as CEOs. So often business owners get stuck in this "I'm a small business owner" mindset, which can be very limiting. So we challenge folks to step outside the business owner mindset of chief cook and bottle washer, step out from working in the business, and look at themselves as a CEO that can work on the business as a whole. Really see themselves as a leader that can provide strategic direction instead of getting bogged down in the weeds of day-to-day operations.
Kathy, you've been in the business 30 years. What have your observations been on companies that have come to such events and even in your own challenges?
Well, people come to the events and they expect, number one, to get a contract, which may take several months of engaging with that agency. And I think we, as owners, and Dominic is correct, we have a tendency to do all the minutia of the day-to-day and not focus on, not really, really focus on who we should be talking to. We have a tendency to think, oh, we can do everything for everybody. And that's not true. And that bogs us down. That's why we fail. So really talking about targeting and focusing on who your real customers are, that's what our businesses really need to keep in mind.
Well, in that vein, we've been talking about determining your market and staying focused, focused, focused. Dominic, can you shed some light on two aspects that I found again in your profile and certainly on the SBA website, sba.gov, of course? And there's a lot of information. You kind of get overwhelmed until you slowly take small bite sizes of reading and start to understand how that applies to your business. So the question is, you've got traditional and non-traditional types of business and two agencies that service either one. Can you just elaborate on that? And then I'll ask Kathy to give her opinion, or rather her experience, in those areas from years
absolutely.
You've been in the business. Yeah.
Absolutely. So traditional federal contracting refers to FAR-based contracts. They're what people typically think of when they think of government contracts, a stack of 100 pages full of red tape and regulations, all guided by what's known as the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulations. The government buys everything from the proverbial beans to bullet through federal acquisition. Services, products, you name it. There's a newer type of acquisition coming out called OTAs, and that's based on other transactional agreements. What the government realized is that, especially in the more innovative and technology-driven fields, the pace at which traditional contracting moves can be too slow to keep up with innovation. And so they created these OTAs, this other transaction authority, in order to develop more intensive and close partnerships with industry, with academia, and with nonprofit organizations to connect with the heart of innovation and the drivers of those innovations and come up with agreements as opposed to contracts that are a little more flexible and allow a little more of a back and forth to adapt and innovate. And so the traditional base is all FAR-based, which is your traditional government contracts. And the OTA is a little more ambiguous and a little more focused on innovation and research.
And who should be concerned with the OTAs? What type of a business?
Great question, Kathy. So OTAs, there are a number of different, what they're known as consortium, that run different very focused OTAs. So, for example, here in New Jersey, out of Picatinny Arsenal, which is up in northwest New Jersey, we've got some OTAs that are focused on weapon systems systems for the military. Likewise, down at Cape May and through organizations such as NJIT here in New Jersey, we have OTAs that are focused on unmanned aerial vehicles and drones, as they're commonly called. So it really depends on what industry you're in, but a lot of it is developing new technologies. There's OTAs involved with the Department of Energy. So it goes across industries, but it's really revolved around those innovative new sectors where technology is moving quickly.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, it is interesting because when you mentioned the drones, I believe it was Nissan the other day had their CEO come over stateside to California and literally drive a unmanned, he was not touching the steering wheel, and it was completely technology driven through sensors and GPS tracking systems. The same thing with Amazon and UPS. They now have tentative approval on commercial drones to deliver packages on commercial sites. Technology certainly does sweep into every area of our business, and even in my area of people development, it's a matter of understanding how people behave with this new technology, whether they're intimidated or whether they embrace it. Dominic, what have you seen in that particular area that some of the businesses that may not be as deeply rooted in the technology to deliver their goods and services, how have they managed to keep up with the times?
You know, you're absolutely right. At one point, there was this designation between a technology business and a non-technology-focused business. And today, there really is no line between a business that is reliant on technology and one that isn't. Even what used to be the most simple manufacturing plant now is so heavily reliant on programs and technology that they can't help but call themselves a technology business. What I've seen best is when businesses can connect with, know their limitations, but know what they do well. And it goes back to the kind of overall theme for today of focus. It's being able to say, here's my business, and here's what I'm great at. And connecting with folks that are great at filling in the gaps that they're not great at. So saying, you know what, I have this great process, but I need to connect with the physical and design folks that can help me put the structure around this process. So it's knowing yourself, having a focus in what you are expert in, and supplementing that with folks who are experts in those other areas where you're deficient.
Kathy, do you want to add to that?
Well, I think that makes a big difference. You have to be working with other manufacturing companies, for example, supposedly competitors, to increase both companies' access to government contracts. Excuse me. So I think working with other companies is a very good idea. Also, if you have one aspect, if your company has one aspect that you do really well, that's where you focus your marketing on, and then bring in other emphasis. So, again, you can't do everything for everybody.
I have to add, guys, that I noticed, Kathy, you've been in the business 30 years. Excuse me, I'm barely out of the pod. I'm just getting my MBE. I'm now applying for my 8A. Kathy, you have focused. You have identified what it is that you wish to deliver. And I'm reading from your capability statement. You say, for example, this is what was really interesting to me. You said, no cost to government agencies for you to put these hosting events on. Which was very interesting. I mean, that is a major benefit.
That's my niche. Mm-hmm.
That's your unique proposition, one of your unique propositions, not all of them. Dominic, you say that you help small businesses with specific focus on aiding them to compete for contracts in the federal marketplace. As a newbie to this platform and environment, as much as I feel I know, some of the challenges that I have felt, and I'm hoping that I can open up questions that other business owners bring to the conference. The RFP, let's go to the stake of the matter. When I receive an RFP from PTAC, from FedBiz, or any of the other resources, they are overwhelming. Can you give us some advice that small businesses that may never have seen this, or may not have the immediate capacity, someone on board, on staff, to begin to fill out these forms? What options, what strategies can you suggest?
Sure, and you're absolutely right. A lot of these RFPs are in-depth and very much written in governments. So I'd like to bring your attention to two specific sections that are of supreme value, and that's Section L, as in Lima, and Section M, as in Mike. Those two sections of an RFP will tell you specifically what the government is evaluating the proposals on and the process that they're using to evaluate them. So, for example, the common misconception is that the government buys everything at lowest price, that we're getting it down to the lowest price that we can. And that's not always the case. For example, for a lot of services, the government is buying, is purchasing them off of what's known as best value, meaning we are willing to pay more dollars in exchange, for instance, for more past performance history, or in exchange for more technical capabilities. So sections L and sections M are going to explain to the business owners, explain to industry, how the government is evaluating these proposals. What factors are we looking at, and what's the weight of these factors? So that you can craft your proposal around those, so that you can put the effort, because I know time and effort are limited commodities, that you can put the effort into developing your past performance section as opposed to working on other sections that are weighted a little bit less than that. So when you're flipping through, that would be one of the first two. Those would be the first two sections I'm looking at, section L and section M, to see how I'm going to be evaluated.
Okay, Dominic. Sidebar. Yes. What's an RFP?
Thank
explain
you.
RFP.
and again, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of this is in government language. Mm-hmm. So RFP is the acronym for Request for Proposal. It is the official document that the government will release when they are looking specifically for folks to provide a well-written proposal along with pricing for a specific requirement. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy, because I even missed that one. We're speaking with Kathy Dewar. She is the host of this year's Mid-Atlantic Alliance Conference, which is being held at the Bally's Casino in Atlantic City on March 31st. Our special guest is also a panelist who will be there, Dominic Belfour. He is a lead business opportunity specialist with the United States Small Business Administration out of the Newark, New Jersey district. You're listening to Managing Change. I'm your host, Ronald Allen, and we are running a series of guest interviews so that we can help small businesses understand what capacity they need, what perspective they need to have when they come to these events, and certainly to help them navigate the challenges and changes in the economy. We'll be right back.
Why do I listen to Managing Change with Ronald Allen and guests on blogtalkradio.com? Because I get to hear somebody else tell their story that relates to me, issues, changes, and accomplishments that affect my life. Whether you're experiencing a career change, going through a family discussion about change, or an entrepreneur navigating the changes in your industry, Ronald's guests share their stories about winning. They bring solutions to bear on your issues. They get me answers to today's challenges in life. That's why I listen. Blogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change in Managing Life's Changes.
And certainly with the economy going into 2016, some of you may know that I follow the Ohio State University Fisher School of Business. They do a very experiential set of research on about 200 to 2,500 businesses around the country. And they ask them a set of questions such as, are you going to invest in capital improvements? Are you going to bring on more personnel? What is your perspective? What is your gut feeling, to coin Jack Kemp's phrase, on the your business, your economy? And unfortunately, 2016 doesn't seem to be a banner year, despite many small pockets of the economy doing well. So it's best to bring some perspective, and certainly our guest today, Dominic Belfour, he is the Small Business Administration expert. As he works with businesses and has spent considerable time, you can see that on his LinkedIn profile. We're not going to give you a rundown of this gentleman because he is well-versed. He's got the experience of being in the military, a Marine, so you know his tempo is right on point with how we need to be focused. That is the name of today's program, Determining Your Market. Focus, focus, focus. And Kathy Dior is with us as our resident host for these series. Dominic, you have spent some time, you were actually a panelist on the NCMA Small Business Symposium last year in Picatinny, New Jersey. Can you tell us what was the mood? What were the expectations that you felt the small businesses that came and attended? And what do you think what is it that they walked away with that would help them address some of their challenges?
So I think the mood, the environment there is that of hope, but at the same time, that of kind of confusion. The government market can be a very mysterious market for a lot of people. There is either a significant lack of information about how to do business with the government and what's going on, or an overabundance of information. And so folks are either scratching their head, not knowing what to do, or completely overwhelmed with the information that's out there. You know, people attended because they've heard good things about the doing business with the government. Maybe folks heard that the U.S. federal government spends $500 billion, with a B, a year, buying goods and products, goods and services from industry. So I think there's a hunger there. What the successful businesses found in conferences such as that and the upcoming one at Bally's is what the successful businesses found were leads, were points in the right direction. I think they were the ones that had that focus that could come in and say, here are the agencies that I can work with, and here's what I can specifically do for them. It's a matter of connecting with the right folks that can help demystify this whole process. It's an ecosystem, the federal government. And when you hit the right node on the outside of that ecosystem, you and your business can really be slingshotted throughout the ecosystem and connected to the right people. But it's a matter of doing your due diligence, preparing yourself and presenting your focus, and then presenting that focus to the right person that can disperse you out there.
Kathy, you had mentioned the word due diligence in our first interview, and it seems that is resonates with your colleague Dominic today. A lot of business owners will say it's still overwhelming. And then, Dominic, you mentioned that if people come and they find leads, they find the right person that points them in the right direction, it's a learning process. I've found it to be a learning process. Can you, with the work that you've done specifically with companies, can you give us a few steps that business owners should think about putting in place? And I talk about maybe it's the accountant, maybe it's the bookkeeper, maybe it's compliance, legal services. Is it capacity building? I think, Kathy, you mentioned earlier, peer-to-peer, partnering, these kind of strategic positions. Can you talk a bit to those, going a little deeper as you can?
Well, it's all of those elements. A company who is just beginning to get into the federal market, and we're talking just federal here today. I'm going to work with a DLA, Defense Logistics Agency. Really, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, what they really might want to consider is discovering who the Army Corps' prime contractors are, and then start there and start to try to work with them. I think experience is, and I don't know, Dominic, if you'd agree, but their past experience and what they have done is probably as important as anything. And so working small activities before they try going big time in prime contractor negotiations, and I think that that's probably the best step. Not start big and not go to everybody, but start small. And I keep emphasizing that, too, because I work with so many businesses that say, oh, I can do this and I can do that. But I haven't received the experience that I really need. I need more contact with these agencies. So you do it through your prime contractors, through their
Dominic,
prime contractors.
Dominic, can you speak to what are the key aspects a small business such as mine needs to consider when partnering or looking to partner with a prime? What should I present to them? How should I present myself to them? Because I don't have that large contract experience. I've worked in the field. I may have done some small contracts, which I have, but I'm looking now to partner with the primes. Can you give us a lay of the land of how to approach that market?
Absolutely. And first of all, let me just say that I think that is the ideal approach for small businesses getting in. Let's face it, as much as it is a very formal process to do business with the government, there's still people behind that. There's still individuals. And we as people are going to do business with folks that we know, that we like, and that we trust. And the way to establish those criteria is to start small and establish that trust through being faithful and being on time and performing on smaller contracts. It's the best way. It's the best way in. And past performance is going to be critical in that. Same way with dealing with large prime contractors. You want to be able to, again, bringing it back to focus on them. These prime contractors have tens of hundreds of small businesses making pitches and proposals to them on a daily basis. So you want to be able to position your business in terms of what it can do for that prime. Market research is huge. So being able to come up to a prime and say, hey, I know you just won this contract with the Army Corps of Engineers, since that was brought up earlier, for doing beach replenishment after this winter storm just came through. Let me show you how my company's capabilities can augment your beach replenishment job that you just were awarded. So showing that market intelligence will demonstrate your knowledge of the industry and of the field, and being able to pitch your services in terms of how it can help the large business is going to be pivotal in gaining their trust.
Kathy,
and Dominic, I want to ask a question. How does a company do that market research? How do they gain that market intelligence?
So one of the great benefits of doing business with the government is that so much information is available publicly because we are the federal government. Now, that's not to say that the information is easily digestible because, again, mm-hmm. we are the government, but the information is out there. So my go-to resource is a site called FPDS, stands for Federal Procurement Data System. Now, every single contract action done by the federal government is listed in that system. So that includes the multi-million, billion-dollar contracts, and that includes the modifications to contracts to change a misspelling. Everything is in that system.
Is that in real time?
That is in real time. As
okay.
contracting officers, now. It might take a few hours, maybe a day, to replicate through all the systems nationwide. But as soon as that contract is written and signed off on, and I can tell you this from personal experience, as soon as that contract is completed, the contracting officer or contract specialist is completing the contract action reports that feeds into this system.
Perfect.
Okay. We're talking with Dominic Balfour. He is the small business and entrepreneur specialist. And when we come to the next side of our program, we want to talk a bit about Venturepreneur Specialist that he supports, along with some changes to women-owned businesses. So you need to stay tuned as our guest, Dominic Balfour, and our host, Kathy Dior of the Mid-Atlantic Conference, which is coming up on March the 31st, will continue with our program. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. As we discuss today with our host, Kathy, co-host, Kathy Dewar, regarding the 16th Alliance Mid-Atlantic Conference coming up in Atlantic City at the Bally's Casino, March 31st. And a special guest, he is also going to be one of the panelists talking with you, the business owners and entrepreneurs, on how to secure government, specifically government contracts, Dominic Belfour. Dominic, I mentioned Ventrepreneur. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, Ventrepreneur.
Ventrepreneur. Okay, I know there's a lot of machinations of words these days. Can you tell us what's going on in that department? What's going on in that push? I know major corporations, and I know we're talking about government, but I know the major corporations over the last literally 10 years, they've had this mandate to help veterans get find gainful employment, despite the fact that there's already a piece of legislation that talks about veterans that go off to war, service, not war, but service. They're supposed to come back and, number one, get their jobs, the same job. And I know some of the major communications companies, AT&T, Sprint, et cetera, Verizon, they downgrade their phone service to about like $10 a month. So all of these things are to help them acclimate and certainly have the family be able to continue their lives as normally as they can. So can you tell us about what's going on with some of the programs and initiatives for Ventrepreneurs and how they can get involved?
Absolutely. So Ventrepreneur, combination or mashup, if you will, of veteran and entrepreneur, veteran regarding specifically regarding military veterans in this case. So one of the biggest challenges for returning veterans, and I feel confident speaking on this from my own perspective, is adapting to the change of coming out of the military. What we found historically is that beyond any other qualifier for success, veterans entrepreneurs have a higher rate of success within entrepreneurship than their civilian counterparts. So SBA recognizes this and has launched a number of different programs to help these veterans, regardless of when they served, transition into business ownership. And it's leveraging a lot of the skills and abilities that they learned and developed while serving in the military to serve in their small business. So taking these leadership aspects, the ability to manage change, and this mission focus, and moving it off the battlefield and into business.
Is it still 181 days of service?
Yes.
To qualify?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And then, now, are these in any industry, any service lines that they can obviously show capability, build their capability statements, put together a business plan, and show that they can provide this level of service or product? Is that across the board, or are there specific initiatives? As you may know, the federal government has seven industries: health, high-tech manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, finance, entertainment and hospitality. There's two others, I never remember them, I should write them down. But they have an initiative that's been going on for some time to help companies hire people and train them. So is there training, is there supplemental support in addition to technical assistance to agencies like your own?
There is support out there. I'm not as familiar with the support that's available for employing veterans. I know,
right,
in addition,
right,
to the federal level, there's state and local level support for training and hiring veterans as well. Where I'm working in mostly is the self-employed veterans.
Okay. And Kathy, what's your take? What's your knowledge base on that? What can you bring to the table for us on that one?
For the vets, I really don't know. I know the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs helps. And there's an organization called NAVOBA, and I think that I, too, need to expand my information on that. They do some sort of certification. Isn't that correct, Dominic?
Yes, NAVOBA does veteran-owned small business certification.
Certification, yeah.
Yep. And the VA will actually assist folks who are transitioning out into self-employment. I actually was recently working with a company, and that's across all industries, recently working with a veteran who does photography. And worked with the VA on getting him some help in that sense as well.
And now, the VA does not do certification. Is that true?
The VA actually does do the service-disabled, veteran-owned small business certification, as well as their veteran-owned small business certification that is unique to only doing business with the VA.
Okay. And I'm another sidebar here. Veterans and women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, there are certification entities for all of those. And you know, we'll talk about that probably in another conversation. But they, for example, WeBank for women, Navoba for veterans, NMSDC for minority-owned companies. Those help companies connect with corporations for the most part, except for the veterans. They do also the VA. But that's something to keep in mind, too, when you're we're talking federal government here, but corporations are important, too, and we will talk about them at another time. But so certification is something companies need to be aware of.
Absolutely. And I need to also interject, guys. The veterans, their experience of being in a war environment, a traumatic environment, is now being matched and married, if you will, with youth who are coming through traumatic experiences. So there is a creative synergy, Dominic, to what you said initially with technology. You have to create another arm, other transaction agreements that serve that need, that burgeoning business opportunity, so that the veteran, instead of saying, well, I'll meet with other veterans, and the reason why I say this, I'm in Pemberton, and you know that Fort Dix McGuire Air Force is not even a stone's throw away, Lakehurst with the big naval guns, and we have tents, outdoor tents. There's a whole community of veterans that cannot transition back into the community. So they're using this skill set, this and the trauma of their experience to match with citizens, youth specifically, so that they help one another. There's also the opportunity for veterans who can share how to how to deal with challenging leadership situations. There's a gentleman called William Brown, Education for Veterans. I interviewed him many years ago. He's still looking at how to bring the educational component of veterans when they're offshore, I say offshore, outside the states, and use that continuing education when they come back to the states. I spoke with some people down in Delaware, the National Reserve, and we were trying to help them with that. So there are some creative opportunities. I think, Dominic, to your point, it is about identifying and focusing on an outcome. Instead of saying what I want to do, let's change that phrase and say, what do I want to resolve? What can I address? And then go and find the resources and tools to make that happen. In that respect, guys, women own businesses. My goodness, women have been doing that forever. And I love using the example Maya Briggs, which was a mother-daughter team who, as we know, today is one of the most widely used personality profile analysis tools. And this was created at a time where women had no vote. They were not considered economic entities. I love using it. I do, Kathy. It's a very powerful statement, and people just don't get it. These women have created a tool that has withstood the test of time. So let's talk about that. Let me shut up. Let's talk about women-owned business opportunities, Dominique, please.
Absolutely. So the government has advanced its women-owned small business certification program to now include sole source authority, which is a huge step for women-owned small businesses.
And explain sole source.
Absolutely. Yep. So meaning if you are the only, in this case, if you are the only women-owned small business that is capable of performing this work, the government can directly award you a contract without having to compete it against the wide array of other firms in the marketplace, which is a great advantage for women-owned businesses. reduces that competition pool to essentially just you, and allows you quicker access to government contracts.
Okay.
Let's expand on that a little bit, please, Dominic, because women own businesses. Women have obviously been in business a long time. We've found that 30% of women who own franchises fare much better than the male counterpart. Women CEOs tend to manage their stakeholder interest better than men, along with the employee basis. Okay, so when we talk about women-owned businesses, do you see a propensity of women going into a particular area, a particular niche?
You know, here in Jersey, I see it pretty diversely. There's no, there are some industries that have historically low rates of women business owners in them, but that's not stopping anybody around here. The women business owners here are seeing opportunities, even in underrepresented industries, and jumping in on them and showing really what they're made of and what they can do.
And Dominic, the sole source is just a part of it. They're the women-owned set-asides that is now a part of the set-aside program. Talk about that. In other words, you don't have to be sole source to there's certain NAICS codes, right?
Oh, absolutely. So again, the government's identified some industries that are lacking in representation from women-owned small businesses. And if you go to sba.gov/WOSB for women-owned small business, you can see that full list. And what they said is if a contracting professional has a requirement for backpacks, let's just say, for the military, and they're doing their market research and they find two or more women-owned small businesses that can produce these backpacks for the military, what the government can do is set that requirement for backpacks aside for competition solely among women-owned small businesses. So now, instead of even competing against all the small businesses in the country, now you're only competing against women-owned small businesses, thus narrowing the competition pool and giving you a little bit of a competitive advantage in that sense.
Hmm. Okay.
I was on LinkedIn, Dominic, and I saw a site that talks about business opportunity specialists, and you're the second person there, U.S. Small Business Administration. So I'm a business. I've been developing contracts, and I want to get into government contracting, and you've told us FPDS, Federal Procurement Development System, which has a fairly comprehensive body of knowledge. And then I come across Army Mission and Installation Contracting Command. What does that do for me as a small business owner?
So the Mission and Installation Contracting Command, or MIC, as it's referred to within Department of Defense, is the contracting command that supports the local installations, so the base, essentially. So now it's a different set of contracting requirements than the folks that are supporting the warfighters or that are supporting tanks or ammunitions. We're doing everything there to support the operations of the base. So that's everything from getting the landscaping and snow removal services, to new construction, to getting the requirements to outfit the cubicles in an office.
Okay, and then they come across. And I'm just kind of mixing it up here a little bit because there are so many different departments, and I think people say, "Well, I'm going to go and work. I'm going to try and get a contract with the Department of Defense." Not realizing that there are deeper and deeper and deeper roots and contact specialists, procurement managers within each of those major departments. So, for example, there's another one here, Defense Contract Management Agency. What role does that play for me as a small business owner, and how should I guess, differentiate between the MIC?
So the first thing you want to do as a small business owner when you're looking at this alphabet soup of agencies that are out there is connect back to what the mission of that agency is. That will give you a sense of who they are. on a very macro level. The next step you want to look at FPDS, as I mentioned, and FBO, FederalBusinessOpportunities.gov, and get a sense of what they're buying. Just because, for example, NAVAIR, Naval Air Command, which is out at Lakehurst, just because they do aircraft work doesn't mean that's all they're purchasing. Just because there's a wide array of things that agencies purchase. So the Defense Contract Management Agency does the contract administration for a lot of the larger defense contracts. What's important about them is that they are the ones that are hosting typically the post-award conferences. So when a small business wins a big contract with the government, DCMA will come in and host a meeting to discuss the requirement and look at expectations and things like that. They'll also partner with an agency known as DCAA, Defense Contract Audit Agency, which is supremely important once you start getting into cost reimbursable contracts, because there are certain DCAA accounting system requirements that businesses must be in compliance with.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Dominic, because I came across one. It's a SAP process. It helps small business suppliers comply with both accounting, bookkeeping, rules and regulations in delivering their services and making them more efficient. So to your point before, if you're going to come and do your due diligence and you're going to then position yourself as a subcontractor to a prime, and then it's Ariba, the system's called Ariba, and it's a SAP process-driven tool that tells the prime you are aware of what's required to do business. And by the way, the Defense Contract Management also on LinkedIn, I went there and I see that they are an oversight agency to make sure all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted for compliance again, to make sure things are done properly. And if there are overages, then they also act, I believe, as a kind of an accounting auditing management service, if I'm not going too far with that description.
Yep, absolutely.
So again, when we come back to being prepared, the whole point of these interviews is, you know, you are the subject matter expert. You're going to help businesses prepare themselves for these contracts. What I'd like to do, Dominic and Kathy, please chime in at any time. What I'd like to do in the last 15 minutes, and we have to take a small break, is can you walk us through a typical introduction to your service, what you would tell, the type of questions you ask, obviously based on the type of business. You know, if you're selling nuclear waste to paperclips, totally different conversation. but if you can kind of give us some a dynamic template. Let's call it that way, a dynamic template on what a business can expect when they come in and speak with you. Is that a fair enough question? I know it's very broad, and I'm trying to cover. give us a scenario that you've actually worked with a company as best as you can. Of course, you're going to have to hold certain information so that we can walk through some of the services that you specifically provide and the company can expect.
You got it.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Managing Change. We are talking with Dominic Belfour. He is the Lead Business Opportunity Specialist with the U.S. Small Business Administration out of the Newark, New Jersey office, and he covers a very broad set of services. As we mentioned, if you're removing solid waste or nuclear waste to selling paper clips, very different conversations, yet at the same time, Dominic's skill set and resources can help you address some of the technical and strategic nuances of doing business with the government. Of course, my co-host, Kathy Dewar, she is the host for the 16th Annual Alliance Mid-Atlantic Conference being held at the Bally's Casino. I don't like gambling, but I will be there on March the 31st. You're listening to Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio, where we talk to subject matter experts about business, about life, about the changes that we're all going to be experiencing and have experienced, and what it takes to get back up. You know what they say, it's not that you got knocked down, it's how high you rise. Even in the term leadership, don't expect people to lead, to follow you, unless you can manage yourself. You're listening to Managing Change. I'm your host, Ronald Allen. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Managing Change with your host. I am Ronald Allen, and every Tuesday and Thursday, we bring you an eclectic perspective on the topic of change. Whether you're dealing with an individual issue, as we know, change starts with the individual, whether it's a family concern, families are the dynamics that we grow up under, social, cultural, of course, business, whether you're an employee or a burgeoning entrepreneur. Today's program, Determining Your Market, is focused on you. Our guest, Dominic Belfour, he is the small business administrator out of Newark, New Jersey. He's been sharing with us many of the government agencies, the processes, the business perspective you need to bring to the table if you wish to be successful. And my co-host, Kathy Dior, is the host for the 16th Annual Alliance Mid-Atlantic Conference in Atlantic City. Dominic, I've gone over your profile pretty extensively, and I see that some of the work you've done, I guess the slogan you have here, at the heart, you are the premier slingshot distributor in New Jersey. You work with the Davids of the world. From your work and your perspective and the people that walk into your office and seek help, do you still feel, or do you feel, that small business still stands a chance? We know that 80% of businesses do not survive. I think it's anywhere between 5 and 8 years. Sometimes they're undercapitalized. Sometimes it's just the true grit of dealing with uncertainty, not having capacity, or in, as we've been talking today, not really having built relationships that they can develop and survive. Can you tell us some of the challenges that you've experienced working with businesses as they come into your office seeking your help?
Oh, you hit the nail on the head with almost all of that. I mean, it's all those challenges and more. It's being the person responsible for going out and finding new business, as well as the person responsible for going out and executing on that business, as well as the person responsible for running the business on the back end of the house as well. It's absolutely an ever-challenging situation, and yet the opportunity is still there. It's the small business owner that is making things happen on the ground, on large-scale projects. It's a small business owner that is developing the new processes in a service or new materials and or new products that keep our economy going. So it's absolutely challenging, but it's a certain type of person that will keep going, as you mentioned. It's in leadership and picking yourself back up. And luckily enough, we see enough of those people that are willing to pick themselves up and dust themselves off and go at it again.
Kathy, you certainly qualify for that. 30 years in the business. What would you say? What can you say? This is interesting, by the way, because people are going to say, well, you've been in the business 30 years. You've crafted your niche. You've created your nucleus of business providers and support systems. The industry today, technology today, you know the old excuse, everything has changed, but you're still in the business. What can you share with us?
Well, I am still in the business, and there are ups and downs, especially with the federal government. But you just have to hang on. You have to change a little bit each time something happens with restructuring going on or decisions that, at least in my case, that companies or that agencies cannot travel. The dollars are not there, whereas 10 years ago they were there. Now they aren't there, and they're coming back a little bit. So it's just a matter of changing. It's doing something different. It's cutting costs somewhere, looking elsewhere for different opportunities in the same niche. So it's sticking with it, and it's changing. Managing change, Ronald.
Oh, I know it. Do I ever know?
Yes, yes.
Dominic, you've done contract administration, which to me means you take this form that is full of what you can and what you can't do, what is required, what is not required. If you don't clip the papers on the left and you clip them on the right, we're going to reject you. If you don't wrap the finished product in foil at a certain gauge. Right, exactly. Is that the sensitivity business owners must have and respect when dealing with the government?
I think contract administration is a little more than that, but that is definitely part of it. You know,
it's true.
So, for example, in some of the requests for proposals and things I've done in the past, you know, I've put your response must be written in Times New Roman font at 12-point font. It cannot exceed 27 pages, and it must be single-spaced with one-inch margins. And so, in a sense, yes, that's tedious for the small business owner. But on the other side, you know, think of it this way. I'm about to write a contract for multi-millions of dollars. If you can't get the font right on your response, how can I expect you to perform adequately on the contract itself? So in one shape, it is kind of bureaucratic government red tape. But in another way, it's that first hurdle that a small business needs to overcome to say, I am trustworthy, and I am capable of doing this work.
And I can read directions.
Absolutely.
You have to be able to follow directions. Otherwise, there's no finish line. You know, you have to be able to follow directions. Absolutely. Dominic, you also were an ambassador of contract management. I like to give people's profiles by asking the questions about the work they've done instead of just reading off a laundry list, because your laundry list would still be going if I had started to give you the program. But to give people an insight as to the depth and the breadth of your knowledge, I'm looking at it and it says here, Contract Management Magazine. And what strikes me, what interests me is ethics have been described as doing the right thing even when no one is watching, and I always edit things. I say ethics is doing the right thing when no one is watching, irrelevant of people watching. But what I liked about it was, I don't know how much I can say, but I'm trying to develop a relationship with some utility companies. And one of the concerns was, and you even mentioned it earlier, Dominic, why should a large prime vendor want to do business with a smaller subprime or even change their vendors? Why should they even look for new vendors? And there's a piece of legislation that speaks to that, and it's under civil rights. A lot of business owners don't realize that a lot of our rights to work with major corporations falls under civil rights. In other words, it's your right as a stakeholder in the community, as a business entrepreneur, as someone who's bringing goods and services to the market, to have the right to at least present your offering. So with this, when we talk about ethics, tell us what are some of the sensitivities, and then what should, as usual, small business owners do to be able to build that capacity in their service?
So I think, you know, there are a number of certifications that help augment small businesses and help give them a better foothold and a better platform to present their services and their goods. That being said, the business still has to be able to capable on their own, and has to know itself well enough to know at what scope it's capable of performing. So I work with a lot of business owners, and you kind of asked me to talk about what the process is like. One of the first things we're going to discuss is, well, tell me what you do and at what scope. You know, I work with a lot of folks who say, oh, I can do this, and I'm looking for that $5 million contract. When I worked up, I did acquisition up at West Point, the military academy, and we did a big contract for paving services. So we put out a request for proposal for everything from driveways to roadways to parking lots to the flag people that have to operate and redirect traffic, redirecting sewer lines, the whole nine yards. And I got a small business who was upset that he wasn't chosen because he had 30 years of performance on this. But when it came down to it, his 30 years of past performance was all paving residential driveways. So the scope of what he was doing didn't connect with the scope of what we were looking for. So I think, aside from using these certifications and using the designations to act as a platform to present your company, you have to know your company. You have to have that focus and specifically the niche and scope of the project that you can do, and then pitch that as hard as you can.
Beautiful.
That's good advice.
That really is, because you qualified scope. I know people who do project management know it. It's one of the first tenets that we talk about. Business owners need to understand, if I'm doing driveways as opposed to the turnpike, very different. Very different.
Right.
To that point, Dominic. Yeah, and to that point, Dominic, and Kathy, I need you to jump in here, because we talked about this on the previous program. And this is kind of a selfish question. I'm looking to be a subprime, a subcontractor to a prime, but I also hear that there's a thing called micro purchases and small business purchases. How can I get into that niche?
I'm not sure what the difference is between, what do you mean a small business purchase? Dominic, do you understand that?
I think it's under either $10,000 or $25,000.
Oh.
I believe it's $10,000 or $25,000.
$25,000 is typically that
25,
threshold.
Yeah. And your question is, how do you get into that? Dominic,
okay, how can I position my services to get into that or be considered for those types of contracts? Obviously, scope being qualified.
Sure, it's knowing who's doing the buying, right? And it goes back to focus and due diligence. It's knowing that, so for example, in the time that I was up at West Point, as I mentioned, part of what I was doing was construction contracting. And I can't tell you how many emails and calls I got from IT companies and, you know, janitorial companies and everything else aside from construction. Well, all that effort those companies put into marketing to me went nowhere because I wasn't buying those products or services. So it's knowing who's doing the buying. Is it the Mission and Installation Contracting Command? Is it the Army Corps of Engineers? When you're talking about the joint base down there, which is Army, Air Force, and Naval base combined at Fort Dix, McGuire, and Lakehurst, who's buying the landscaping services that go across all those? Excuse me. So especially talking to the micro-purchase threshold, contracting offices typically aren't purchasing using the micro-purchase card. Typically that's within the program office, and there's a credit card holder that's doing all those purchases. So really finding out who your customer is, who's doing the buying for that customer, will help you focus your attention on the right people that can make things happen for you.
true. And even though it's just $25,000, and I know someone is looking for $500,000, it's an excellent way to get your experience and to know the people that you're supposed to be working with. So it's small, but it's an excellent start.
It can also pay my mortgage for a year.
There you go.
In the mortgage business, we used to say, what is the real cost of living? So if you look at a gallon of milk, the cost of a gallon of milk in January, and then you look at the cost of that same gallon at the end of the year in December, and everything else that has risen in price, has your salary also increased? So sometimes a 99 penny still makes a dollar, and that principle is borne by some of the wealthiest people. It's not always hitting the home run, but rather getting to first, second, third base. So, yes, Dominic, I know we're running out of time. I know you've got another aspect of your profile, which, again, speaks to some of the areas that are of concern that business people need to understand. When we talk about change management, we talk about process, getting these contracts. Yes, we all want the big tamale. You talk about cross-generational communication training. And I bring that up because I had the fortune of working with a hardware store owner. And in the store, there were young people. And to all intents and purposes, I would never speak to them if I was on the road. One individual, right? Well, no, I'm just saying it the way it is. Through the chase. So one individual tattooed right down all over, big earrings, the whole bit. And we were just talking haphazardly. I mentioned about the radio program. He talks about his audio and recording business in Philadelphia. All of a sudden, there's no more generational gap. It was a communication gap. And I think, to your point, that's what you're saying here. Is that also a challenge in the marketplace?
Oh, absolutely. And it's you know, communication, and as someone such as yourself who knows this field and is deeply ingrained in it, communication is a two-way street. It's not only sending communication, but making sure that you're sending the right communication and making sure that the other side received it the same way that you sent it and intended on it. And generations communicate differently. So being familiar with those differences doesn't necessarily eliminate the differences, doesn't necessarily eliminate the challenges that come with it, but it helps create understanding amongst the people that are involved. And when we have understanding, we can come to better sense of terms. When you're talking about negotiations, you can understand the people you're negotiating with better. When you're talking about potential business relationships, you can create such a stronger and healthier relationship through shared understanding than you could if you simply wrote off differences as generational.
Exactly.
Kathy, you must have an opinion on this. You must have an opinion.
Well, I do. Well, you're talking generational. This is really an aside, but I have a 26-year-old daughter who is I look at her as my baby, and she is in a position of authority in the transportation industry in Seattle. And I'm thinking, wow, she looks so young to me. Why would somebody pay attention to her? But they do, and they need to. And I think
what's
we just
connection?
Need.
What's the connection? Why do they? No, why do they do that? Why do they? No, as a parent.
I don't know. I'm just saying. I mean, we look at somebody young as not having the experience and the understanding, and that's not good. But I think once a person starts talking, then we change our mind. So I think it's something that goes away pretty quickly, actually. I think we get to understand what somebody has to say and has the authority and has the understanding. We've just got to pay attention and be open. That's the way it is.
Dominic, can you give us closing remarks on what businesses should be doing to prepare for this March 31st conference?
So take a look, see who your target customer is, and start crafting your marketing to them. You're going to have a great diverse set of attendees and panelists and speakers at this conference. the same way as if you were a single person, you wouldn't walk into a large nightclub or a bar and scream, "I'm here, everyone should date me." You need to craft a targeted response and a targeted approach. So figure out who you want to see at this conference. Figuring out what your message is going to be about how your company can support their mission. And having that approach of being centered on them instead of you and what you do will be a differentiating factor between you and the other companies that are going to be there.
And Dominic and Ronald, on our website, and it may be for other events as well, but we list which agencies you can meet with and companies, corporations. There are website links to their website. We also have what is called an e-guide, so you can actually go in and talk to or communicate with these folks ahead of time because the information is up there now with their email and phone number. But, for example, the DLA, the Defense Logistics Agency, is one of them. If that's somebody that you really want to talk to, you know they're going to be there. So start doing your research. Go to all of the entities that Dominic was mentioning and craft a message to them, both verbally and in writing, as to how we can help you. This is what we can do for you. This is how we can save you money is probably and do a better job than other entities. So research is what it's all about at this point.
Thank you very much, Kathy. You've just been listening with Kathy Doerr. She is my co-host on the series of interviews that we're hosting, 16th annual, leading up to the 16th annual Mid-Atlantic March the 31st conference in Atlantic City. Our special guest, Dominic Belfour, he is the small business and entrepreneur specialist, veteranpreneur specialist, government contracting contact. You need to definitely do some homework on him. Go to his website on LinkedIn, his profile. Certainly search him out on the itinerary for the conference. Dominic, thank you very much for taking this time out. I sincerely appreciate a whole hour and then some from a federal government. If anyone ever tells you you guys don't care, you send them to me.
My pleasure, Ronald.
Because it's... Thank you. Your information is very valuable. Kathy, as always, thank you.
You're welcome. And good job, Dominic. It was a pleasure listening to you.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
It certainly was. We will definitely catch up with you again, Dominic. And as usual, you're listening to Ronald Allen on Managing Change right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our program will now be live on its links. Also on Managing Change 2, that is a numeric 2 at the end of the website.com. And, of course, it'll be out there on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, and all the other wonderful social media sites. Thank you, guys. I sincerely appreciate your time, and I look forward to the March 31st conference.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on Internet Blog Talk Radio with guests providing their perspectives about you, the individual, the family nucleus, your career, your business, and your entrepreneurial spirit, life's perspectives about managing change. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for another episode about managing change on InternetBlogTalkRadio.com. Remember, the program is now showcased on managingchange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat, enter their forum, or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change. Catch Managing Change Internet Blog Talk Radio.com. Search Managing Change every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Be seeing you.